Reese's peanut butter cups are the greatest, but let me play devil's advocate here. Let's see. So, no, that's a good thing. that's definitely not a problem. Reese's, you did it. You stumped this charming devil.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
Hi, everyone. I'm Joanna.
And I'm Jenny.
Welcome to Hyphenated, the podcast about living in the hyphen.
This week, for the first time, we have a guest on the show.
And it's someone who is very, very, very funny and is a very good friend of mine, which is the only reason she actually agreed to be on this show. Sarah Cooper is a comedian and author who went viral, guys, with her Donald Trump lip sync videos. But she is a best-selling author. She's written How to Be Successful Without Hurting Men's Feelings and 100 Tricks to Appear Smart in Meetings. She's the star of her own Netflix special, Everything's Fine. And she's one of the best writers I've ever had the pleasure of meeting.
She has been a guest on The Tonight Show, Jimmy Kimmel Live, and Ellen. And we could not be happier to have her here today on Hyphenated.
Sarah, welcome.
Hi. I didn't realize I was the first guest. I didn't really want to be the first guest. So I'm going to go ahead and just see myself out.
Is this too much pressure for you?
It's too much pressure. And also I like to do things that are sort of tried and true and already been done so that I don't mess it up for other people. Cause it's setting the bar super high for you guys and for guests in the future, you know?
I know, Sarah, but I had to pull my friendship card on you really quick before you became even more famous. and I'd like to remind you that I haven't pulled out my cancer card yet. So this is one favor, and the next favor is still up in the air. Okay.
I just lost 1,000 Instagram followers. Thank you so much.
Damn.
Sarah, one of the reasons we wanted to get you in on this show is because you really are a multi-hyphenate, not only in identity, but also in career. You are so many different things. I kind of really want to hear from you what you identify as. Like, who is Sarah Cooper?
Sarah Cooper wears Ann Taylor Loft every day, all day, every day. I'm nothing and no one to everyone. I consider myself beige on the outside and on the inside. I'm an extremely beige person. And I think that's because I'm an immigrant who came here. My family's Jamaican. They're very Jamaican. I was born in Jamaica, but I came here and I was just like, oh, I'm going to be as American as possible because I'm going to fit in. And I was correcting my parents. They were like using Jamaican words and Jamaican dialect. And I was like, that's not the proper way to say that, mama. Like I was they were very annoyed with me, but they brought me here. So what was I supposed to do? And I think because of that, I just became very bland. I wanted to fit in so badly that I just fit in everywhere I went to the point where I just didn't stand out very much. And so that has kind of followed me like wherever I go. I'm just kind of like this recovering people pleaser, kind of like trying to like be everything for everybody kind of person. And so when you say like, what do you identify as? It's like, I'm black.
You said black with a question mark. When you fill out a census, are you like black and you add a question mark to it?
I add a question mark. I'm like, I check the African American and then I put a big follow up with me because I don't know if I'm allowed to even check this box, but I think I am. Because I'm Jamaican American, but people see me and they sometimes see an Indian woman or a black woman or a mixed race woman or Ethiopian. I've gotten before, usually they see what they are. They're like, oh, you are like me. You look like my daughter. So you must be what she is. And so I don't know. I wish I could take like a big bold stand and say this. One thing I do really definitely identify as is a cisgender woman. That is for straight, a straight, boring, like, you know, like, I'm very ashamed to say I'm attracted to men. I will say that. But sometimes I'm like, you know what? Maybe I just conform to society so much. Maybe my heterosexuality is based on me just conforming to society because I didn't want to have like a big disagreement.
So you were always just trying to be the person people wanted you to be.
Yeah.
But that's, I mean, is that the case now? Is that still the case?
I'm starting to, like, very recently, probably within the last few years, learn about myself and be like, oh, I actually love this, or I really like this, or I have an opinion on this. And so that's been really cool. I feel like the older I get, I think by the time I'm 50, I'll know who I am. You know, I think that's my goal.
Isn't it funny that there's all these coming of age stories of like people in their teens? I'm like, can we get a coming of age story of like someone in their 40s, please? Like,
I think about that all the time because a lot of people come of age in their 30s and 40s. I mean, I almost think that's what happened to me too. I'm a hardcore people pleaser and I'm still working on that. But even though I was born and raised in Miami and embedded in the culture, I did try to change who I was and how I talked and how I dressed to appease the masses in Miami. And it took me a while to realize that's not me.
Mm-hmm. That's so hard. It's so hard to like realize what is you versus what is you trying to make others happy.
Which I think for comedy, you know, so much of comedy is point of view, which is inherently identity, right? A lot of what you're saying really resonates with me because when I started doing comedy, I ignored my identity because I did not look like what people perceived a Venezuelan to look like. I guess I look like a Jewish person, but like my identity is complicated for people to just get from looking at me. And I literally stifled who I was for the first few years of my career. Cause I was like, I can't explain it. There's too many caveats to preface every joke. Do you know what I'm saying? It's like, I'd go to stand up sets like, hi everyone. Okay, here we go. I'm from Venezuela. I know I look like a barmaid. Isn't that crazy? Anyway, my last name is Hausman. It's because I'm Jewish, not because I'm a Nazi. I know there's a lot of Nazis in Argentina. Those aren't me. It's like, I have to do a whole monologue before I get to the freaking punchline.
It's so true. I think about this a lot with like why there's so many like white male comedians is because they're just sort of seen as like, I don't know, like you're starting from a point that everyone understands. Because a lot of things with jokes is like, what is the context that people need in order to get your joke? And I think with white guys, you almost need zero context. You're like, oh, white guy, I understand everything about you. I don't need anything else. Whereas like with us, it's like, oh, I can't make a joke about being black without like first pointing out like I am black, but kind of, but not really. I mean, I have a whole set about that just because people need to know that. Otherwise they feel uncomfortable. Like, can I laugh at this? You know,
it's like the white man is just the stand in for everyone's experience because there's been so many stories and movies and shows that it's like, oh, this is like a blank canvas. But then anytime it's not that, it's like, oh God, we gotta hunker down here and give you the context to make you be able to connect with me.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, that's how it is too when you're trying to pitch a show specifically that's about your culture and you're like, okay, so it's like the Fresh Prince song. You just gotta explain how you got there. and then go from there.
Yeah.
Oh my God, you're right. The Fresh Prince song is like, here's a bunch of context. And then you have like the Growing Pains song and it doesn't give you any context. It's just like pictures of a family and that's it. And it's like, yeah, it's just a white family in suburbia.
There they are. Like,
why is there where's the rich black people in LA? Like, you know.
Yeah, it's like how he got from Philly to Bel Air and the whole thing. I feel like I should make my own rap about.
Yeah, we should maybe all make you should. Rap. That would be a good bit.
In Hialeah, born but then raised in West Jeter. Not West Jeter in New York, but West Jeter in Miami. And then
yeah, this is brilliant. Oh, Jenny, this God. Is the new hyphenated intro. I know so many people know you from your lip sync videos, which is kind of weird for me. It's like, you know, when you see a teacher outside of school and you're like, oh, my God, this teacher has this life. Like when you started coming up with the lip sync videos and I was like, wait, that's Sarah? I know Sarah from her stand up and her books and her
Well, I mean, we worked together and I was so intimidated by you. I was really intimidated by you when we first met because like you're just so well, like you share your ideas so well and you have so many ideas and you're so like knowledgeable about history and like culture. And like, I was just like blown away because I'd never been in a room before and pitched ideas before. And you did it and you like nailed it. And it was just amazing.
Sarah, that's so, oh my God. Me and Jenny were literally talking about this before, but how I feel the same about you guys in that, like, I can't believe I get to be friends with these brilliant women who have skills I don't have. And it fills me with pride. It also fills me with self-doubt sometimes. Like, oh my God, am I doing like this right? Like, should I be more like,
do you remember how every week I thought I was going to get fired?
Sarah is, it's so crazy because Sarah Cooper is now like a name in every American home. And it's crazy because she would write the most brilliant joke and script. And then she'd be like, hey, can we talk? And I'm like, oh my God, she's going to tell me that like my pitch was bad. And then she'd be like, I think I'm going to be fired. I'm like, what? Where did you get
fired
this
for
from?
What? For not being good enough?
Yes. I thought at the end of every day, I was just like, I don't belong here. I don't belong here. I don't deserve this job. Yeah. Terrible. I was just like, they are going to fire me. And Joanna was the only person that I felt comfortable like confiding that to because she was always like, shut the fuck up, bitch. You're fine. And I was just like, okay, maybe I'm okay.
That's the way I'm a supportive friend. Shut the fuck up, bitch. You're fine.
Shut the fuck up, bitch. That should be on a shirt.
That's the kind of tough love I needed. Yeah.
Reese's peanut butter cups are the greatest, but let me play devil's advocate here. Let's see. So, no, that's a good thing. that's definitely not a problem. Reese's, you did it. You stumped this charming devil.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
Why do you think we have imposter syndrome? Like us three, we've had imposter syndrome. Why?
I personally feel like right now I'm feeling like we hang on to it because it feels safe. I don't know why I'm saying that, but I think it's something like there must be a reason why it feels good to doubt yourself and to think that maybe you're not good enough. And I think part of it is like, I could talk myself out of trying something. And if I don't try, then I can't fail, you know? And I feel like part of that just like stops you from like putting yourself out there. And I think that that is some kind of like, oh, I'm not ready. I'm not actually ready to speak at a conference. I'm not actually ready to take on this, you know, CBS pilot, you know? And then you're like, okay, well, maybe when I'm ready, I'll do it. I don't know. It kind of gives you an out, I guess.
I've talked about self-sabotage and stuff like that in therapy quite often. And just overall pessimism. And my therapist says that's just your way of protecting yourself. So imposter syndrome is probably the biggest reason why I don't, aside from my ADHD, is why I don't complete things sometimes, especially when it's big picture stuff like writing that pilot that's going to get me staffed or, you know, doing something bigger than what I've been able to accomplish thus far. So the comfort thing makes a lot of sense because it's this little blanket and it feels nice. It's like you're protecting yourself from that failure that you worry about.
Yeah. Cause if you have if you have a voice that's like, you can do this, you know, it just, if you tell me I can do it, that means I have to do it now. And maybe I don't want to do it cause that's risky and scary.
Yes.
What if it doesn't work out? Like what if, you know, the best, it's interesting how the ideas I like the most are the ones where I never write the script or finish the sketch because they're sort of crystallized as little diamonds in my head. And it's like, oh, I didn't do it because I wasn't ready to, or I didn't do it because like, oh, it's almost there. But then they never become anything. So there's something that like I think I learned during the pandemic which is letting go of perfection is so difficult. And just being like, this is not the best iteration of this idea. This is not the best form of this script, but it's done and it's out there, and that's better than nothing.
And that goes for like opinions too. I mean, that's what I'm learning now. I'm like working on this pilot. And when I had something I worked, like learned when I worked on the special as well, is that like, I'll have a really strong opinion about something, but then I'll present it as, you know, I was thinking, you know, this, but you know, we don't have to do anything about it now, but maybe later, just keep it in mind, you know? And I'm just like, why am I doing this? Like, I actually feel very strongly about this. So I'm trying very hard to get better at that, because otherwise stuff comes out and is made that you're not happy with. And it's like, why would you spend all that time working on something that you actually care about and not make it exactly what you want it to be, you know?
I've read a lot on the fact that imposter syndrome especially affects, you know, minorities, people of color, women specifically. And I think it makes sense, because it's one of those things where you're kind of not just raised to think this way, but it happened to me in like film school. You know, it was me as the only head writer on our college comedy show with a bunch of white dudes, and they would try to sabotage me, and it was tough. And that was just college, you know? So it's like, it surrounds you as you grow up and grow into your career that you're not meant to make it. There's all these like roadblocks. And so I think that's another reason why we feel like, nah, this can't be. I'm not really that good. This is just luck. No, you know, this is an illusion. I'm not really gonna make it that far.
Yeah.
Jenny just moved into a new house, and me and Sarah just saw your cabinet open by itself.
Okay, well, that's my ghost, and I brought him with me from the haunted mansion when I was 5, and he's been living with me ever since. Because it's real. Now the ghost will follow you home. It's
the fine. Ghost is like, I don't want to feel invisible in rooms. I want to be heard.
I just thought y'all were like, Eureka, Jenny just brought up a great point about imposter syndrome. But no, there's a ghost behind me. So that's, I mean, that is cooler. Okay.
But I think a lot of it has to do with self-sabotage. And self-sabotage is, I think a lot of it comes from not seeing people like you doing things you're doing. There's something where I'm like, oh my God, am I doing this right? Or like, was I too mean? And it's like, if I look like Michael Douglas and I saw that Wall Street movie, I'd be like, I can talk to people however I want if I really believe in an idea. You know what I mean? It's like examples and sort of representations of people like inevitably affect the way that you perceive yourself. So if you're kind of like breaking the ceiling and doing something new that you perhaps haven't seen a lot of people do before, it's just like, I don't even know, I can't even follow. How do you do this?
Yeah. I mean, and that's something that we have to do all the time, is do something that nobody that looks like us or has had our experience has ever done. And I take it for granted sometimes. Like sometimes I'll be annoyed. I'll be like, first, you know, Asian American woman to do this, first Black woman to do this. And I'm like, okay. But then I'm like, I have to like remind myself, no, that's actually a big deal. Yeah. You know, because it's been white men over and over again for centuries. And so this is like, things are feeling like they're changing, and that's good. And we need to stop and be like, no, that's a big deal for you to be the first person to do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because it took a lot of, I think, self-reflection, you know, and which is what we're doing all day. But I don't think a lot of people need to self-reflect and dissect their identity and dissect what that means for the outside world so much. But I feel like it's inherent in a lot of people, and it's inherent in us.
Yeah. And what we do. I mean, like, I was just thinking, like, I don't know why I'm always doing this kind of like self-reflective stuff. Like I'm making something, and then like, everything that I'm talking about in the thing that I'm making is actually happening in the making of it. It's really weird. Like this example where like, I said the N-word, not the real N-word, like a variation of the N-word on stage once in a joke. And I was asked by a white guy to not say that, which I thought was funny, because it was like a white guy telling me, a Black woman, by saying the N-word offended him. I don't know what he was doing, but then I wanted to do that, a similar joke for my my JFL audition, and my manager at the time was a white guy who told me that he didn't think I should do it.
So I had another, like, the joke was about a white guy not telling me, and he told me not to tell the joke. I was just like, okay, so now I have, like, white men on top of white men telling me that what I can and cannot say.
But is it, do you think it's, like, identity policing? It's like, no, like telling others what
yeah,
they can.
Yeah, I actually don't. I don't feel comfortable saying the N-word. And so, and I also think that other people don't feel comfortable with me saying the N-word. I did karaoke once when I was at Google, and I did a Jay-Z song, and this will definitely be a scene in my show where, like, I sang a song with the N-word, and I just went for it, and people were uncomfortable. They were uncomfortable. So, and I was like, but shouldn't I be able to? But I don't think I am, because I don't know. It's just so complicated. It's so complicated.
Identity is complicated. And even in, so your identity, like, beyond, you know, how you identify in the sense of being Jamaican, being an immigrant, like, you're a comedian, but you also have this background in tech, which is very mysterious to me. I still don't know what you did at Google or Yahoo. It's like, yeah, I worked there. It's like, what did you do exactly? And you're just
it's so easy.
When I look at what my husband does, like, he has, like, he's like in the Matrix, multiple monitors with, like, little characters. And he's just, like, you know, breaking into NASA or something, you know. But for me, I basically took that and made it pretty. So, like, the buttons you see, or, like, the shadow on things, or, like, you know, the pop-ups or whatever, I designed those things. So that's what I did.
You designed pop-ups?
Yeah. I mean, if you use Google Docs or Google Sheets or Google Slides, I made it look like what it looks like.
That seems to me like the opposite of being a comedian in a lot of ways.
There's a few things in common and a few things different. Like, the one thing in common is empathy. Like, when you're designing something, you really have to put yourself in the shoes of someone who's going to be using that application. And so you're like, if they wanted to make this letter bold, like, what would they do? What are the steps that they would take? And how can we make that as easy as possible? And so with, you know, writing a joke, you're like, okay, well, how do I set this up? And how do I give them the best, you know, payoff? And so you're putting yourself in the mind of the audience. And so that's similar. The thing that's different is, like, with design, everything has to be perfect. You know, everything is pixel perfect, exactly in its place. And what I've noticed with acting, with comedy, I love stuff that's fucked up. I love things that aren't, you can't make sense of it. Like, it's surprising. It's interesting. It's like something you've never seen before. And so that's a tough thing for me, is, like, to get into, like, performance and really, like, just let go and try not to be perfect.
Wait, this ties into our whole discussion about identity before. You were so concerned about being perfect that you sort of let go of the fucked upness or the complication of your identity, and then you became a Google Doc.
Yes.
A white Google Doc, just ready for anyone to write stuff in.
Right. But exactly.
Guys, I was an English major in college. It's finally paid off in this one interview. I'm feeling really good about it. Let me run with it. But you sort of accepting yourself, and also, like, you know, the TikTok you uploaded that blew up was just something you just recorded at home, and, like, and you've done books, you've written iterations, and you've had editors, and you've had to perfect every word, and then you just put something out there that was imperfect. It was perfect in its imperfection.
Yeah. Yeah. And I feel like that the imperfections make it something you want to watch over and over again. Which is weird, because, like, you can't plan that stuff. And that's what's beautiful about it. I mean, the best, you know, some improv is terrible, but the best improv is magical, because it's, you know, and especially on, you know, shows like Curb Your Enthusiasm, like, you can tell they're just sort of riffing, and that's fun. I just love that kind of stuff.
It's my favorite. It's like us riffing right now.
Yeah, kind of.
Reese's peanut butter cups are the greatest, but let me play devil's advocate here. Let's see. So, no, that's a good thing. that's definitely not a problem. Reese's, you did it. You stumped this charming devil.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best.
The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
Sarah, so, you know, you've talked about how, like, sometimes you're a little insecure or you're shy, or and now, you know, you're writing characters based on yourself. And that's actually feeding you comedically. What you have, like, talked about yourself that you're trying to kind of working on, is that part of your identity that's helping you find comedy?
Yeah. I mean, I think the more that I embrace, like, my fucking crazy neuroses, the funnier things are. Like, I have to put this in something, but I went to this, like, we had like a little game night. We have like a little pod of COVID tested friends, and we like hang out sometimes, and we hung out Saturday night, and I brought over a dip that I needed the host to put in the oven to bake for like 20 minutes. And then I brought with my dip some chips, some special Tostitos scoop chips. And the dip wasn't ready, but the chips were there, and somebody poured out the chips, and they were using my chips with someone else's dip. It was driving me crazy. Like, being able to like observe that about yourself is like fucking gold, because I'm like, that is the dumbest thing to be like petty and annoyed about, but it's such a cool character trait, you know? Like, that's such a, like, you know, that's just the stuff that I just love. And like being able to observe myself like that, I just try to do it all the time.
I know now to never freaking move your chips ever.
I mean, it was so funny, because, and it's also like, and I feel like maybe I'm like, having a few edibles actually makes me notice those things more, which I love, because I love being able to notice things like that. Because then I can like write them down, and, it was, I don't know, when I'm high, like I just notice things so much more.
You said it in the way a high person would say it. I like notice things so much more.
I just discovered, like, I'm 43. I just started getting high like a year and a half ago. So like, it's so late. It's so late, but like, and I'm Jamaican. Like, I should have been getting high like since I was five.
But I think identifying stuff about yourself that could be perceived as weaknesses, and that, you know, I see a lot of people, particularly like boomers, being like, oh my God, yeah, like, I suffer from anxiety, but I don't tell anybody about it. Or like, yes, I had OCD, but like, shh, no le digas a nadie. And for, I don't know if it's our generation or if it's our career or what, but like, truly, my anxiety is the fucking funniest thing about me. Mm-hmm. Like, the fact that when I have anxiety, my hands, when I have a panic attack, my hands clench up like an Italian trying to explain you something. Like, that is inherently the funniest thing in the world, even though it's like kind of tragic. But my imperfections are so funny. They're so
funny. They are. It reminds me of yesterday I had like a phone call that was making me extremely nervous, and I had to like take my stage fright medication. So I would stop shaking. Yeah, because you know how your hands clam up? Like, mine just shake. Like, they just shake. And I'm like, I need to control this situation. And it is. It's freaking hilarious.
The my co-writer for this pilot, Cindy, she's also a people pleaser. So, like, when we have disagreements, it's hysterical because neither of us want to disagree with each other. So it's just these, like, long, like, well, I think this, but if you think that, that's okay. But I think this. It's just like, and we have to, like, be like, okay, just say what you mean what you say. Like, don't worry about hurting each other's feelings. Just do it. And we have to, like, really force ourselves. But it's hysterical.
You should write a sketch of two people pleasers talking to each other, and it just ends in like them at 97 still in the same room being like, but like, whatever you want, if you want to put a period or a comma instead of a comma, like, whatever, like that is there you go, $1 million idea.
I made a cartoon where I was just like, I have trouble getting off the phone unless the other person wants to get off the phone. So it's just like me on the phone until I'm like a skeleton. Cause like, I can't, I'm just going to die before I say I got to go, you know?
Oh, I'm the same way. It's terrible.
Yeah.
The anxiety. Oh, no wonder
when I call both of you guys, you literally, we just talk forever. And I'm like, when is this going to end? It's cause it's up to me.
It's up to you.
Now I know.
It's like an art form. Like, people that just know how to walk away especially from an in-person conversation. I have so much respect.
Well, I learned it. My mom has this really cool trick that when she needs to get off the phone, she'll be like, "So what do you got planned? Or like, what are you up to now?" So she'll like sort of like lead, and then I'll be like, "Well, I'm up to this." And then she'll be like, "Well, have fun." So she basically like walks me out of the conversation.
I'm going to try to use that too. I sometimes lie because like I have the same issue, but like I think it's just because I like to talk. But sometimes I've had to get off the phone with my mom, and it's always like an emergency, like, "Oh my God, the pasta's boiling." Like I always end it in like a dramatic way. Or like, "Oh my God, I dropped the bags." Like, I always feel like it has to be a ridiculous excuse. Like, when it could just be like, "All right, I gotta go." Like, why do I have to make this a drama? Sarah, before we let you go, we have this segment of our podcast where we sort of talk about a specific word that we use, or a word that, you know, exists in another culture that represents something crazy. Is there, you know, you talked about you telling your parents that the way to say something is wrong, but is there any Jamaican word or word that you grew up with that like you always have to explain when you use in front of a bunch of Google people?
Well, my mom's nickname for me was Wash Belly.
What?
Love.
Yeah.
Wash Belly, because I was the baby, and so it's so gross. I cleaned out her belly, so I'm the Wash Belly.
What the hell? I would have never guessed that's what it came from.
Yeah.
I thought it was because she like washed your little belly.
No, I washed out her belly when I was born because I was the last one.
Is this just something that like a Cooper thing, or is this
no,
like
it's
a
Jamaican. It's a Jamaican.
Oh, I
thing.
Love that. Yeah.
Wash belly. Oh my God, Sarah. Now I'm going to save your name on my phone as Wash Belly Cooper. Is that okay? Wash belly. What a word. What a lovely word.
Yeah, not really.
Well, have fun.
I will. Thank you. That was really very, very well done. Am I talking to my mom right now? Because this is... Wow.
Yes, my dear Wash belly. Yes.
My dear Wash belly.
Reese's peanut butter cups are the greatest, but let me play devil's advocate here. Let's see. So, no, that's a good thing. that's definitely not a problem. Reese's, you did it. You stumped this charming devil.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.